Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
What this sounds like to me is literally the process of creating cryptids. There's a strange idea buried in the transhumanist imagination, and at first it sounds like science fiction. It's called animal uplifting. The basic premise is simple enough. Humans essentially deliberately raising non-human animals to higher levels of intelligence through biotechnology. What happens if the dog man, who is, like, let's actually think about dog man as an experiment that has been released from a lab or escaped from a lab, right? If they're going to release ticks that are biological weapons, it doesn't really strike me as that odd to release bigger, more horrifying animals as biological weapons as well, right? What you end up getting a lot of the time, most of the time, or until you get it right, are broken threshold animals. That's the best way that I can sort of describe it. An animal that sits on the threshold between humanity and animal. Like, you have a creature that shares aspects of both. Oh, look at, right off the bat, is we got anti-cavity hack. Ultrasonic fracturing causes bones to heal into even harder structures. Subdermal vibrator, an adult toy implant. You have an implant in the voice that changes the voice when activated and includes multiple settings. Electricity generation, like an eel. Here's a god helmet for general probing. Use geobacter driven microbial fuel cells would allow you to power implants. Also, you'd be able to plug yourself into a power source and convert electricity to blood sugar. Like, what are we even talking about?
Hello, citizen. This content creator discusses controversial topics. To properly engage in this content, an open mind is required. There's something very strange about this man. The words he says, the things he does. Is he perhaps a glitch in the system? Is he a rogue federal agent? Is he actually alive? Is he a lunatic, unhinged and on the loose? Can anyone even stop him? He is one of the internet's most mysterious men of mystery. He is a man who has seen his own death and lives life on the run, surviving out of spite and because he's not superstitious, but he is a little stitious.
There's a strange idea buried in the transhumanist imagination, and at first it sounds like science fiction. It's called animal uplifting. And it goes by other names too: animal cognitive enhancement, sapientization, biological elevation. You're probably getting the clue here. The basic premise is simple enough. Humans essentially deliberately raising non-human animals to higher levels of intelligence through biotechnology and brain machine interfaces and drugs and embryo engineering, cybernetics, genetic intervention, the same type of stuff that you get from the CRISPR designer baby idea. And this isn't talking about just merely training animals to be better at certain things. This idea is much bigger and more dangerous. It's to move another species toward the threshold of human-like intelligence, maybe even beyond it. Human-like intelligence and human-like abilities. The reason to do that is to create an enhanced world where animal kind operate on our level. What this sounds like to me is literally the process of creating cryptids, creating monsters. You can go ahead and say stuff like, oh, we want to give humans the ability to speak to animals and stuff like that. And we're going to try to do that through bioengineering and nanotechnology. But when you start talking about making animals the things that you're upgrading to the capabilities of humans, my brother in Christ, you are creating a literal cryptid. And if it escapes the lab, people might start reporting sightings. And that's where it gets really, really crazy. So essentially what we have here through animal uplifting is humanity attempting to share its intelligence, to share its features with the animal kingdom, with animal kind. And what kind of civilization, I think it's important to ask, would create a new intelligent species before it has learned how to treat the intelligent species that it already knows to exist? Us. Obviously, by now, we're starting to see, just by being citizens of the world, we're starting to see that the powers that be are definitely withholding high technology from us that would do things like cure all of the diseases, that would do things like make our world a fundamentally better place, would conquer homelessness, would conquer the healthcare issue, all that kind of stuff. It would fundamentally, the technology that we have would eliminate all of the problems. But if you eliminate all of the problems, then you don't have anything to provide a solution for, and therefore you have nothing to actually make money off of, which is why the powers that be just sit on their technology and kill each other's scientists so that they don't ever get to their secret level, instead of actually distributing that technology and that knowledge and that intelligence upon the everyday man like you and me. So what does something like animal uplifting do in a society that doesn't even care about the people who are in the society? What happens if the dog man, who is, like, let's actually think about dog man as an experiment that has been released from a lab or escaped from a lab, right? If they're going to release ticks that are biological weapons, it doesn't really strike me as that odd to release bigger, more horrifying animals as biological weapons as well, right? For me, that's not really that hard to understand, or that, for me, that's a conclusion that's not really that hard to come to. Of course, this is a possibility, the whole cabin in the woods situation, all of that kind of stuff, right? If you guys have seen that movie Cabin in the Woods, where it's like a secret underground government lab where they're creating or studying all these cryptids and everything, it's kind of like that situation. And what happens if they're in society, like a domestic cat or a domestic dog that can now speak, that can now do all of these things, that can communicate with you, that maybe has some other abilities, like the ability to do household chores or do tasks or run up the road and get you a drink from the gas station or whatever it is? What happens when they start asking for healthcare? What happens when they want to learn how to paint? What happens when they want to get together and members of their newfound community that has these abilities that involve the ability to speak, the ability to converse, the ability to impact humans? What happens when all of the hybrid cat beings who can now speak to humans want to create a community of their own, a little village of their own, perhaps a little area where they can all just smell each other's butts and you know, clean their coats and do whatever cats do all day long, right? So what happens when we reach that point through animal uplifting? It's a difficult, we don't know. We as modern man have not been there. It does appear that it did happen in the past, and we can see what happens in the past through all of this, all of these myths and legends and all of the lore, right? There were hybrids in the land at one point. We saw how we treated them. We often called them gods. We called them monsters. They ate us, etc., etc., etc. For thousands of years, humans have sort of drawn a line around themselves. And on one side of the line, there was language, there was law, religion, culture, property, morality, personhood, the soul, all the things that make a human what they are. And then on the other side, there was beast, there was rock, there was tool, resource, wood, machine, whatever. But that line has never really been as clean and cut and hard drawn in the sand, as I think we realize, because the Watchers came and probably did some experimentation that created these hybrids, right? But we know that parrots can use human words with pretty shocking accuracy. Some of the videos I see online of parrots talking are absolutely crazy. They seem to have an emotional spectrum that's different than other animals as well. Dogs and cats can learn to communicate through like button pressing and stuff like that. You guys have probably seen all the videos of the dogs outside, now, angry, now, treat, like all that kind of stuff, you know, talking like through the button pressing. And then you've got the like certain apes that have been able to use signs and symbols and create tools, and you have dolphins and elephants and octopi and pigs and whales and all of these entities, these animals that seem to somehow, once in a while, horses as well, they seem to somehow routinely disturb this old myth that animals are just reflex machines. There's sometimes it does definitely feel like, sometimes I swear, and I know this is weird, but I have this dog, right? This German Shepherd dog, and I've had German Shepherd dogs before, but this one is different. Kalari Cotopaxi is different. She is very just not only smart, but like emotionally intelligent to a degree that sometimes astounds me. That because this isn't taught, I didn't teach her, and so me and my wife have routinely had the discussion of like, it definitely feels like there is a weird evolution going on in even the most basic animals that we have all around us, the ones that we involve in our you know family life and the ones that live in our homes. Like, there definitely seems to be more to them now than there used to be, because Kalari Cotopaxi is way smarter than my other German Shepherd was. Bless her, bless Scarlett's heart, but Kalari has just a different level, and the whites of her eyes are more prominent. She's more, there's something more human about her that also drives me to wonder if the telekinesis that me and her share, because there is like a weird communicative ability that she has through telekinesis. It's the only way that I can really describe it. You know how it is if you have an animal friend or pet or whatever, you know when you can feel like you're communicating kind of with the animal. This is ability of humans, by the way. This isn't a special ability of mine. Anybody who actually cares enough to spend any time around animals will find that very quickly you'll be able to inaudibly communicate with them, and you guys will be able to be on the same wavelength. And I just feel like that's different with some of these newer animals that are being born in general. Like, they are just being born a little bit more than just reflex animals. In 2024, the New York Declaration on Animal Consciousness stated that there is a strong scientific support for conscious experiments in mammals and or conscious experience in mammals and birds, and that there's a realistic possibility of consciousness in many other vertebrates and some invertebrates even. And when you think about it, the Bible never distinctly says that animals are unconscious or they're, you know, they're non-sentient or whatever you want to say. They're never really described as something that is not, you know, not important to the human experience. They are not just meant for food, I'm pretty sure. And you know, there's some people who believe that animals were never really meant to be for food, in which case you have to ask the question, what were they for if not for food? They were sort of made to each perform their own task upon the planet, and what was mankind's job? To subdue. And so what you end up having is you actually have a whole bunch of creatures in the animal kingdom that are all meant to help humanity basically subdue the planet and be what we can be upon the planet. And so, as humans study animals, sometimes they have found that there seems to be more consciousness in some of these animals than in others, and also just more consciousness than we even realize. And I think that's important because it means that animal uplifting that the scientists are trying to do, that the biohackers are trying to do, it doesn't begin from nothing. It begins from something that's already alive, already feeling, already perceiving, already inhabiting a world, perhaps already having some experiences, already having, you know, a genetic predisposition towards certain things. The animal is not an empty vessel waiting for human intelligence, like, say, a homunculus or a golem or maybe a like a clone, perhaps. This thing is already existence. It's already a subject. It's already got instincts and memory and fears and probably some type of emotional capacity. It has attachment to certain people or things. It has territory, as animals usually do. It gets hungry, and therefore it can get angry and aggressive. It likes to play. There's probably a hierarchy to it if it's a pack animal. All of this stuff is being uplifted with the animal, okay? So the uplift does not create the intelligence from dead matter. It enhances that and then adds more that go along, adds more abilities, adds more intelligence, adds more capacity.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
That goes along with all of those abilities that the animal already has. All of those things that make the animal what it already is. And of course, it goes without saying that they're going to show you the cuddliest version of this technological venture that they possibly can. They're not going to show you the T-Rex that they brought back from the dead and then gave the brain of a human. They're not going to show you that. They're going to show you the cute little kitten that talks to you. And imagine your cat talking to you. I keep bringing this up because there actually was a program called Garfield Inc. that went and tried to give cats the ability to speak through genetic modification. And this is like something they tried to go into the genetic code. They tried to bioengineer a cat that could actually communicate verbally with a human being. And if you look for Garfield Inc. now, it's completely wiped off the internet. You won't find it. It's hidden underneath the actual Garfield costume. The Garfield cartoon costume, funny enough. But imagine your cat talking to you, like in that cartoon. Imagine a dog explaining, you know, its pain to you. Imagine dolphins that can be used as oceanographers, or elephants that remember ecological history. Remember, or think about parrots acting as translators between species. Chimpanzees contributing to hunting or science or becoming slaves. Whales participating in diplomacy with humans and exploring the deep depths. This is the optimistic version. This is the part of science that, this is the part that science is going to show you and be like, see, this is all very good things. But as anybody who's seen Planet of the Apes will know, it's only good until it's not, right? It's only cool until all of a sudden they're trying to kill you, and then it's not so cool anymore. It's David Brin's version in the Uplift novels. He's a writer where humans genetically elevate chimpanzees and dolphins into fellow participants in civilization. And Brin's fiction helped popularize the term uplift in this context. And his fictional universe centers on the idea of patron species essentially raising client species into sapience. But science fiction is useful because it gives us the whole monster to visualize before the laboratory gives us the first example of that. Even now, a lot of times you'll find people saying it's just like Fahrenheit 451 out here. It's just like Blade Runner out here now. It's that dystopian. And so science fiction is important for that reason. It gives your imagination a limit. And in Brin's imagined future, uplifted animals become these partners. In a corporate future, they become assets that can be used, sold, taken advantage of. And that's the first consequence that we have to understand about this technology. A talking dolphin doesn't become automatically a citizen, but you might have to explain that to them at some point. Just like you might have to do that for the robots or for the AI, right? A genetically modified chimpanzee is not automatically given voting rights. a cat altered to produce speech is not treated like a child or a neighbor or some kind of moral equal on a human level. In the world that we actually live in, anything expensive to create is usually something that is owned by the person who creates it. Anything biologically important is often patented. A lot of technology like this often goes through stages of militarization. And unfortunately, when you start enhancing creatures, you're inevitably going to get to the point where you're like, at what point does this thing have more rights than maybe its natural counterpart? Because I've given it the ability to do things that ordinary counterparts can't do. And that's where it gets really horrifying, I think. Because the first pathway towards uplift is not a sudden, super intelligent dog or Shakespeare reciting gorilla. It is communication. And this is already happening in a primitive form. Great ape language, the research involved with apes communicating in their language, it sits in a pretty controversial zone. And we have a number of apes that have, you know, reached varying degrees of fame through their ability to communicate. We have Coco the gorilla, Nim Chimpsky, we have Kanzi the bonobo. These are creatures that have been experimented on. These are apes, these are monkeys that have been experimented on to see if they could speak. And a lot of the behavior could be explained that they showed could be explained through imitation and reward seeking and cueing or loose interpretation, which is not really considered true like communication with something. But the Nim Chimpsky, who is very famous, project became a turning point because Herbert Terrace, after reviewing videotapes of the chimp, concluded that Nim's signing just completely lacked any true grammar and was largely prompted by human trainers. And so he was more trained to do something than he was trained to have an ability, than he was given an actual ability, or that he tapped into something that is now part of who he is, who the ape is. Okay, so the ape language debate kind of comes down to it not really just being about apes. It's also about how badly, and this is important, it's how badly science and humanity want either to find ourselves in animals and say, see, this is proof because we taught them to talk. Now that's proof that we came from them because they have the ability to talk just like we do. That's their logic, which is just brain dead. But it is their passion to either find humans in the animals or animals in the humans. Because both of those things will get rid of God in the way that, you know, we believe in him generally. And that is ultimately the goal. And all of this is really crucial to understand because animal uplift begins with that temptation, I think. I think there's obviously ways that, you know, I saw one guy trying in this biohacking forum. He was talking about how cloning is actually inherently pro-life. Like, cloning human beings is inherently pro-life because it enhances human life and it continues to create a sort of longevity that humans will become able to take advantage of through cloning organs and through cloning the brain and the memories being uploaded and downloaded into clones and all that stuff. Science actually argues that cloning is pro-life. And so they'll also argue that animal uplifting is pro-life because it's enhancing life on the planet. That's really dangerous, and I think it's a temptation. We mistake this access into the human brain or the animal brain for some kind of understanding of it that we don't have. So the animal presses a button and we think we have entered its mind. The parrot says green, we imagine it sees green the same way that we do. The ape signs, you know, hurt or whatever the sign for hurt is, and suddenly the room changes because now everybody's like, oh man, what have we done? We've created something that's able to tell us that it's hurt, and now we have to talk to it differently, treat it differently. But the reverse danger is just as real, and this is where all of this gets really hairy, because we can also dismiss too much. We can demand human grammar before we even admit that the animal is suffering. We can say, talk, say something, tell us what the answer is, do this, do that, and the animal doesn't really understand, and so it's continually being punished, essentially, for not actually being where humans think that it is mentally, or, you know, in an intelligence sort of capacity. We refuse to recognize intelligence unless it looks like something that humans do, basically, which can be very dangerous when it comes to experimenting on animals, because you don't know where your limit really is when it comes to experimentation. And of course, we know that animal uplifting would weaponize all of this. Every experiment would take place inside some sort of fog of ambiguity. You know, I think animal uplifting would weaponize also the uncertainty of where animal kind is in relation to humans. Because every experiment would end up taking place inside this sort of this question. Did, you know, the enhanced animal consent? Does it understand its condition? Is it getting paid to be experimented on? Is it suffering more because it's aware? Is it lonely because its own species no longer really recognizes it, because it's not really truly only its species anymore? It's its species and something else. Will it be pecked to death by the flock? Is it trapped between animal instinct and human expectation in a way that it becomes this sort of mind, this consciousness with no society and no family and only mission? Scientists have already studied genes associated with speech. You guys are probably hearing this and being like, how can you give a cat the ability to speak? How can you give a dolphin the ability to speak? Why are you even saying this stupid shit? But as I was just saying, scientists already got the genes associated with speech and vocal learning and brain development, and they tamper with them in the minds of animals. This is why they believe they have this ability. FOXP2 is often called the language gene, and though that nickname is pretty simple, rare FOXP2 is often called the language gene. And there are rare FOXP2 mutations in humans that are associated with speech and language impairments. And humanized FOXP2 studies in mice have shown changes in learning and vocalization-related systems. But it's important to understand that FOXP2 is not just a magic speech switch. And this is kind of like this related field that this Garfield Inc. that allegedly existed was trying to dabble in, to give cats the ability to speak to their human counterparts. But FOXP2, like I was saying, it's not this magic speech switch. And so they're still going to do a lot of experimentations, I imagine, come up with a lot of prototypes that are sort of be able to vocalize something differently. But can you imagine the failed experiments of this? Just a bunch of mumbling animals? Like, just a bunch of animal, like, what are they doing? Are they in the lab just, like, making random guttural sounds because their genes have been manipulated when it comes to how they vocalize, how they communicate? It's really scary when you think about it for the animal. Can you imagine, like what the animal must be going through? But you're seeing one of the most dangerous aspects of that comes along with this type of science. Public imagination gets out of hand. People hear things like the language gene and they start imagining a cat that just wakes up one day and all of a sudden he's quoting Nietzsche. But biology, as most of us know, doesn't just work that way. I'm a little more grounded than that. Speech does require some sort of anatomy, right? Vocal cords and stuff like that, that are very specific to the sounds that you make and sounds you can make. It requires certain motor controls. Speech does. It requires an auditory learning. Just because you could give the cat the ability to say liquid death does not mean that it is going to physically be able to, because it might not have the vocal cords, or it might not have undergone the auditory learning to even know how to make those sounds in the first place. A lot of speech has to do with culture and motivations and memories of where the creature has been. Then you have the whole concept of accent, all that kind of stuff, right? Like, you know, I'm kind of like reaching for words here, but you get it. Just imagine learning how to talk. Imagine learning a second language, just like going out and learning a second language. And it's a language like some sort of lost tongue, like the guttural Tibetan language or something like that, where it's like, not only do I have to learn that the words actually mean something that in my previous brain I didn't know they really meant. I was kind of just reacting on a cue that I performed when I heard that sound. But now I also have to somehow learn how to make those sounds in general. It's a bit like that. Sorry if I'm going off on a tangent here, but what you end up getting a lot of the time, most of the time, or until you get it right, are broken threshold animals. That's the best way that I can sort of describe it. An animal that sits on the threshold between humanity and animal. Like, you have a creature that shares aspects of both. And then third pathway into all of this is embryo engineering. So if adult enhancement is too limited, then the obvious next move is to just develop the creature in the womb, right? Change the organism before birth, edit the genes in there, select the embryos, use IVF-like techniques, possibly combine uplifting with things like artificial wombs, cloning, chimeric development. These are all other aspects of this field that are well in development and are working to a certain degree. When you start creating creatures in the womb, you have your own unique issues. To uplift an adult animal through training or devices is one thing, right? You can train an animal to press buttons when it needs to go outside, or to understand the word sit or stay or snacks, right? You can give it something like Neuralink so that it can do other things, okay? But to engineer a lineage, which is what you get when you modify something in the womb, because then that thing is born in a unique way, you have created a germline intervention, which means that the change that you have made is inheritable. Now we are talking about one enhanced creature, a chimpanzee, or one modified dolphin, one modified bird or dog or cat. You are now talking about, especially if you're giving them human traits in some way, a manufactured people.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
By law, 21 plus, terms and conditions apply.
Call it what you want to, but to me, it seems like a new species, a manufactured people. It is a population of a type, a species that has been designed under human authority. And this sounds a lot like the way the Watchers and the Nephilim were said to have sinned against animal and nature kind. According to the Book of Enoch, specifically in Chapter 7, the Watchers and their offspring, the Nephilim Giants, sinned against the natural order, including all animal and plant life, following their descent to Earth. Okay? And this sounds a little bit like that in the Bible, and according to the Book of Enoch, which, again, for those who don't know, is a non-canonical book that you can go ahead and do your own research on it to decide how much you like it, but it's often cited as context for Genesis 6. The Nephilim and their angelic fathers, the Watchers, sinned against animals and plants by corrupting, devouring, and mixing species. They taught humans forbidden knowledge and practice, and then committed sexual immoralities with animals and other creatures. If you keep giving creatures more and more animal features, it's only natural that humans are going to fall in love with them, which is going to be disastrous. All of this raises the whole patron problem. In David Brin's novels, he's the writer I was telling you about before, uplifted creatures complicate a sort of patron-client relationship. And the older species, the older hybrid species, guide the new hybrid species after they have been successfully uplifted. But in reality, the patronage would become ownership. We all know that. They would create armies of apes with this modification, armies of dolphins, and they would be owned by the Navy. They would be owned by the Army. They would be owned by the CIA, whatever it is. So who writes the education system for uplifted animals then? Is it each independent organization? Who controls their reproduction? Who decides whether they can breed with unmodified members of their species? Who owns the embryos? Who decides through quantum and AI technology if they inevitably get the ability to edit their own genetics? Who determines whether this whole project is considered a success or a failure? Who terminates the failures? Who decides what to do with the failures? What does getting rid of a failure morally mean? Because the word uplift, when you're uplifting an animal, so to speak, it sounds noble enough. It sounds honorable, and you can say it sounds pro-life, just like they try to do. But every step of the process appears to me to be some sort of coercion, some sort of forced, almost like sin against these creatures. It goes without saying, we are probably meant to take care of the animals, not just destroy them and experiment on them like the fallen angels taught us to do. Put that hand in hand with the fact that these first generations of animals that are going to be uplifted, these experimental animals, these are not volunteers. These are animals who were forced into this. They have no idea what they're going through. And I'm not saying this in like a Greenpeace or like a PETA kind of way, but they would be experimental subjects. They would endure the errors and the pains. And Bryn himself even acknowledged that reaching a glorious, uplifted future would no doubt involve immense suffering during the long developmental process that is inevitably going to need to be gone through before we reach the success. Which brings us to the next way that we could do this. The fourth pathway that we could follow to uplift animals is neurosurgery, and the fourth way that they are using to uplift animals currently, I should say, because I will show you the list of modifications soon. When you see it, you will probably be like, they're doing this because it's diabolical. But this fourth pathway involves neurosurgery and brain-computer interfaces. This is already way more familiar because the public has seen monkeys control mouse cursors and robotic arms and play games through implanted devices. We've seen this kind of stuff, and in a way, we're more comfortable with this than the other stuff that I was talking about, because this feels more like attaching things to something, attaching things that can be taken off instead of actual like genetic modification. Neuralink famously demonstrated monkeys playing through a brain machine interface, and the company has also faced animal welfare controversy because of this. These experiments, I believe that I've seen like something like 1,500 animals have died during the Neuralink experimental process so far. And of course, this is part of these prototypes. This is part of the prototype system. But then what you're creating is kind of a machine, a biological machine. If you're putting these devices on these animals, you're creating a diabolical machine, because a brain computer interface does not have to make an animal generally smarter to make it more useful. A monkey, for instance, that can control a drone is not considered uplifted in the scientific sense, but it is cybernetically extended. It's purpose has been given a purpose that it can fulfill that lies within the human realm. A dolphin connected to a military sonar grid, which is what they were doing in World War II, would not need human language to become part of the intelligence system. They can monitor the data. They can collect the data that the dolphin is collecting and decide what to do from there. The dolphin doesn't need to tell them, hey, I saw a submarine. They can put it together with the technological devices that are on the animal. A dog that is wired into surveillance networks would not need to know philosophy to become a biological sensor platform. It would just need to be there and see and bear witness. It wouldn't have to ask the question of, should I bear witness? Should I be here to bear witness? Should I bark at this person? It just does what it's supposed to do. And that's, a lot of people believe that dogs have been bioengineered by Nazis too, specifically German shepherds, to do some of these types of things, to have more human abilities themselves, abilities that are more useful to humans through enhancement. And I think that's pretty important to understand. Look at what we're doing with the robots, for instance. We're not treating them like pets. We're not treating them like members of the family. We're immediately putting robots into the workforce. The early market for animal cognitive enhancement is not probably going to be companionship. They're not going to be giving out those dire wolves that they're bioengineering to everybody, because they are not meant for companionship. So these animals are going to be used for labor and warfare, mainly, probably policing. All the things that you're seeing robots do, that's probably what animals will be engineered to do. They'll be able to detect you. They'll be able to bioengineer birds and bees and stuff like this. They've already done it to a fruit fly, which I'm going to show you. They have a fruit fly that is literally living in a simulated world. All they have is the brain, essentially. They're going to be able to do that with all animals and humans. It's going to be a new level of biosurveillance. They're going to be able to do this with mosquitoes and ticks, so that when they bite you, the biological data will be able to be read. Humans have already used animals as workers for literal centuries. Look at the horse, the donkey, the cow, the dogs, the cats. I mean, this is nothing new. We would just be giving them more responsibilities as our responsibility as a race increases as well, or as we want to do fewer and fewer things, we just bioengineer the animals to do it. But if an ordinary monkey can be forced into agricultural labor, what happens when an enhanced monkey can understand more instructions, perform more tasks, and operate equipment, for instance? The answer is, go watch Planet of the Apes. That's the answer. Go watch Jurassic Park. Intelligence never guarantees liberation in this type of environment. Current legal systems are also already struggling with non-human personhood. This is actually a thing that humans are worrying about, that you might not know that humans are worrying about. Some human somewhere is getting paid to worry about this. The Non-Humans Rights Project has pursued legal actions seeking fundamental rights for some animals, while courts in the U.S. have generally resisted recognizing habeas corpus rights for elephants or chimpanzees. So add engineered sapience to that debate and the old answers are going to start to look pretty primitive. But the second consequence is theological and philosophical. If humans uplift animals, do we, the humans, become creators and stewards and tempters and tyrants and gods? Religious traditions have long placed humans in a special moral position. And in my opinion, I think that this may be a sort of bridge too far, a zone we're not supposed to go to, because there are catastrophic results for going there, for crossing that bridge. Animal uplift would literally force a crisis if a creature is artificially brought into self-awareness, who bears responsibility for its soul, its suffering, and its education, and its destiny, and it has to think about all of these things. Did humans give this creature something holy? What if they want to believe in God? Or did they drag it into this new burden of knowledge, the knowledge of good and evil, as humans inherited or received in the garden as a result of their sins? Do you get that? If the animals are living in a sinful world and they're given this sort of intelligence, are we giving animals knowledge of good and evil? Because an animal just is naturally instinctual most of the time. They operate on instinct. But now you're changing that. They have instinct and knowledge. What does that turn an animal into? Well, maybe a dog man, maybe a Bigfoot, maybe a crawler, maybe a rake, maybe one of these types of beings, maybe a feral person in some instances, maybe the type of creature that we would categorize as a cryptid, as a monster in the woods. There are many old horrors when you start imagining animals that become aware, that will pop into your mind. And it's not because animal intelligence or intelligence in general is evil, but because self-awareness carries more than just instinct. Self-awareness is all of the sudden worrying about your future. It's worrying about the things around you in a way that becomes more emotional. A deer does not need to know that it is mortal in the way that you or I do, for instance. A dog doesn't need to understand abandonment as sort of a metaphysical condition like we do, right? A chimpanzee does not need to be made aware that it was engineered as a transitional product on its way towards something else. Human intelligence granted to these creatures, however, would not probably be considered a blessing upon them, because they would be getting some kind of dread along with that intelligence, that knowledge. They would be getting the feelings of alienation and shame and lost memories and anticipation for something that's coming, and a fear that is more cosmic, perhaps. The ability to imagine futures that they might never get. So to uplift an animal is not just giving it tools to perform tasks. It's also to give it a tragedy, to give it a sadness, to give it a, as close as we can, a spiritual death almost. And existence, therefore, while it's alive. And then you have the whole concept of social displacement among these creatures, and uplift, and that might be why they retreat to the woods, and they're so hard to find and to photograph and to capture. Not only do they have different abilities that sort of transcend human and animal and put it in a class of its own, but an uplifted animal would not automatically belong among humans or among its original species. So it would only make sense for it to run and hide if it could. Sort of like the Frankenstein's monster situation, where it has to go into the world and has to learn about it by itself, because it can't possibly learn from the teachers, because they're like these Stranger Things scientists who are just creating monsters for the sake of creating monsters, and therefore they don't have this entity's best interest in mind. But also humans like you and me, we are afraid of them, and we talk about them on podcasts as if there's some sort of anomalies that we need to be afraid of, and that maybe even evil, right? But in actuality, they are these uplifted animals that we have forced into existence. They are perpetually living in agony, mentally, and if not spiritually, they're in agony from the lack of a spirit, but the existence of a human mental capacity, or an enlightened or an uplifted mental capacity beyond normal animal kind ability. What kind of crisis does that create in animals? And would that just drive them to violence, to literal insanity?
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boost and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Now imagine like uplifted chimpanzees or dolphins raised in human institutions. They're educated enough to understand their captivity, but not legally free enough to leave it. These uplifted entities. Imagine enhanced dogs, okay, bred for companionship, who are intelligent enough to feel humiliation when they're treated as pets, because they feel lower, even though they think similarly. Imagine cats who are designed to speak, but still being bought and sold. This isn't evolution. This is a system made to take advantage of biology. And then you have the consequence of militarization, as we kind of already touched on. Any tech that improves perception, obedience, endurance, stealth, communication, any kind of environmental adaptation, This will always attract military interest. And being able to do this to animals, creating super soldiers out of animals, is probably just as valuable as being able to create super soldiers out of humans, and probably easier. Enhanced animals could be used in underwater surveillance, like we were talking about they did in World War II with dolphins. And I think even some seals. I think the Russians did it with like a seal or like a, I don't know, I might be wrong. Don't quote me on that. But obviously, it's obvious to see how animals can be useful to a military. First of all, they'd be phenomenal spies. Can you imagine just sending a random feral-looking cat across enemy lines? Or, you know, putting it into a country and just saying, go and seek out the secrets of Vladimir and infiltrate the mansion or something? Like, who knows? I don't know. I'm thinking out loud here. But imagine the same thing with birds. Sitting out on the porch, sitting out on the balcony, outside the window, just listening to secret conversations, all of this kind of stuff. Bugs that have the ability to do the same. And even if they can't communicate it back in the way that we talked about before, they can transmit it back through technology and signals and stuff like that. All this is just, this is where what you have to really look forward to as this system moves beyond the infancy stage and into the stage that is developing very rapidly, so rapidly, in fact, that the philosophical questions such as these are required to be asked, essentially, to be a responsible human being. But then we haven't even begun to talk about the ecological contamination, which is when these uplifted animals begin to reproduce, when they escape and begin to interbreed. This project would leave the lab in this situation and enter a biosphere where it would then begin to propagate, and it would begin to create a new, it would change the realm of nature, essentially, because you would have a super species released into the wild. Cryptids. So a cognitively enhanced invasive species would be introduced into the ecosystem, which, if this species is not uplifted enough, would cause the ecosystems to destabilize. Perhaps the reason we're not seeing stabilization problems as a result of cryptids is because they are more uplifted than we realize, or they don't take advantage of the ecosystem in the same way that normal animals do anymore. A modified predator with better problem-solving ability would be an absolute nightmare. Can you imagine what an animal who wanted to commit, let's just say, environmental warfare upon the city in which the lab that manufactured it was? And so it just goes around killing all the animals, preying upon all the people, disrupting society by destroying buildings or throwing Molotov cocktails at cars or slashing tires or preying upon the scientists as they come out of the lab, all that kind of stuff, because I think that is inevitably what you would eventually get. You would have also a socially enhanced animal that might outcompete its wild relatives, most likely would outcompete its wild relatives. So even if the animals are sterile, their existence would still change, like, the politics of conservation and how we deal with nature. Do we protect wild dolphins, or do we replace them with improved dolphins like they've been doing with the ticks? They took a bunch of the regular ticks and then they created them into something different, and in the future all ticks will give you Lyme disease. All of them. This is the goal. All ticks will give you the disease. All of a certain species will perform in the way that we want them to perform, because traditionally they have performed in ways that we sought to take advantage of or that we didn't like and therefore had to change. So the improved animal will inevitably change the ecosystem. Do we preserve wolves, or do we engineer cooperative wolf dogs for managed wilderness? Do we save nature, or do we upgrade nature until there's nothing really wild anymore and everything is kind of controllable through inheritable genetic optimization? You know, you can go down this rabbit hole as far as you want. And all of what we're talking about, this might be the ideology behind uplifting animals in the first place. The belief that creation is unfinished and humans somehow, for some reason, believe that they have the authorization to correct it and finish it and evolve it by force. Uplifting doesn't only change the animals, it changes humanity too. It changes you and me, it changes us. The moment we create another sapient species, humanity is no longer the only known biological intelligence capable of civilization. This muddies the water for everybody who is born after that technology has been developed, that ability has been developed. In every subsequent birth, those people will begin to wonder what really separates humanity from the animal kingdom if we are all sort of sentient, if we are all sort of mentally capable of problem solving, and if there is an element of, dare I say it, spirituality to us just as there is the animals. Because a lot of humanity won't be able to tell the difference. They can barely tell the difference between themselves and their neighbors half the time. So they're not going to be able to tell the difference spiritually between animals and them. What is that going to do for the future of worshiping a creator God? Is this going to humble us? Is this going to make us more heady and aggressive in our efforts to kill God because we can do the same thing? Is this going to provoke panic amongst the people everywhere? Obviously, I think that some animals or some humans would embrace these uplifted animals as their sort of kin. You know, we got the people who spent a lot of time in the woods doing witchy stuff, and they're gonna now be able to take their animal kin that can communicate alongside them into the woods and all of this kind of stuff. Others would see these creatures as abominations and as monsters and as experiments that should have never been. People would begin to fight for their rights. People would begin to demand the containment of these species. Religious groups and governments and corporations, animal rights movements, obviously this starts from the get-go, and the militaries and biotech firms and politicians, they would all begin to fight to define what these beings are in a way that makes sense to this new humanity in which they exist. And just like we talked about in the last episode, where they are gatekeeping technology until they are able to definitively proclaim that the nations of the world, I'm talking about, the nations of the world are gatekeeping technology right now in this current time. That is why we're not advancing very much. That is why it feels like we've been in limbo for years. That is why we still have so much of the same tech that is just like kind of like getting a little bit better with each iteration. But you're on like iPhone 50 and they're still doing the same things that iPhone 1 did. So it's like, okay, great. We're really advancing, guys. But no, the reason that we're not is because they're gatekeeping the technology and they're waiting. The nations, the highly developed technological nations of the world, are waiting for that one thing that they finally release that ushers in the new era, because they are trying to change reality. They're trying to do a reality shift. This is an age shift, and pretty soon they're going to just bombard us with all sorts of new technology that is going to absolutely blow our minds. And I think that this type of stuff is going to be one of those things that comes very, very soon. And in that way, the whoever defines these creatures first and what these creatures are to society will probably also control their fate for the coming times, okay? And this is why the story can't be told as simple futurism. It has to be told as an analysis of power. The question is not, can we make these animals smarter or uplift them? The question is, who has power over these animals? Who benefits from animals being made smarter under conditions that the animals themselves did not and would not ever have chosen? If the answer is the animal itself, then this whole thing is going to have to come under some scrutiny and moral consideration. Because if the answer is that the animal itself gets to choose what kind of life it lives, then the experimentation becomes illegal, probably. It becomes like doing experiments on human beings. And this is all going to come from these animal rights movements and these human rights movements and all this kind of stuff. This sounds crazy, doesn't it? When that just came out of my mouth, it sounded absolutely diabolical. But then I remember that we probably used to do this for hybrids in the pre-flood days. And it's as in the days of Noah, so shall it be. It kind of feels like that. So it's not, to me, it's like trying to figure out, like, it's almost like when the angels came, when the watchers came, the angelic ones came and did this kind of stuff with their angelic technology before, as outlined in biblical and extra biblical texts, and as portrayed by all the myths and legends and beautiful art from all of these things throughout time presents for us to clearly see, it seems like the technology that we have now is catching up to what we had in the past when the original hybridization and the sinning against animal and nature kind initially started, and mankind, of course, as well, initially came to be when in the pre-flood days when the watchers descended and all that kind of stuff. It seems like now we are catching up to that. So if it feels like this is out of hand and there's no way that this could ever happen, this is like this idea is completely out of hand, there's nothing here yet, there's no way that we're possibly this far along yet, if that's what you believe, that's just fine, give it time. Because I'm sure we'll get there. If we're already doing this to some degree, it's not going to be forever until we get these animals to the degree that they are doing things that are actually useful to humanity. Now, of course, the question is going to come out and harmful to humanity, and especially humanity's ways of thinking and worship and how they view the world around them. No doubt how they view life in general, all of that will be changed by this, because you'll be forced to give animals power. And that's crazy. But you're gonna have to give animals power and space in your society if this kind of thing is going to continue to be developed. This is like the colonization of the mind, right? You can colonize a society of people and you still have to treat them like humans. So when you're colonizing the minds of animals and they become more and more human over the course of the next, let's just say 50 to 100 years, what happens when the dog starts calling you daddy? When the cat starts calling you mommy? What happens when you leave to go to work and you have to actually worry about these creatures logging into your email account or something like that? It sounds comical because I'm talking about it in that way. In the same way that this is colonization of the mind, it would also be just a kind of new type of domestication. It would be domestication 2.0. Right now we have domestication that is already reshaping animals for human needs every single day. We've got dogs who are remade into companions and guardians and hunters and, you know, handicapped assistants. We have cattle that produce milk and meat in the way that we need them to. We have chickens that do the same with eggs, right? We have horses who at one point were considered engines, to the point that we still measure things in horsepower, right? We have pigeons who were messengers, falcons who were hunting tools and status identifiers. You know, you got all this kind of stuff that has already happened in domestication 1.0. But an animal uplift would enter into domestication 2.0. It would be the next escalation of domestication. The old domestication changed their bodies. The new domestication would police their minds. Inevitably, there are going to be those among them that will not want their minds policed or messed with.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Especially as we get into stronger and stronger and more intelligent species. The old domestication gave us animals that obeyed. The old domestication was getting animals to obey you. But the new domestication that would come from uplifted animals would make us basically have to domesticate animals in the way that they understand that they are obeying now. They know that they are in servitude to mankind. And I think that would cause a lot of moral problems in society. And we're probably not ready for it, to be honest. All right, let's take a look at some of these modifications. Now, these are modifications in humans, as you can see up here. These are human modifications, and this is a sort of wiki that has been put together by some mysterious people, some of which are connected to Jeffrey Epstein, biohackers, bioscientists, those types of people. People who are trying to change humanity, the way we look, the way we function, the way humanity is in general. And they're trying to do this through hacking our body and modifying it. And this is all part of the transhuman agenda as we slowly make our way toward the post-human existence. So look at right off the bat is one that I need. You got anti-cavity hack. This is a microbiotic type. It does exactly what you would expect it to do. Hacked microbes introduced into oral microbiome to fight cavities. You've got all sorts of different, here you got your categories of types of changes, cosmetic, performance, down here you have sensory, curative, novel function. So you've got these different types of these different categories of change here. You have strength-related projects. You have, let's see what else we got here. On-demand adrenaline boost introduced into the adrenal glands. This is an implant. You have aerobic gene doping. You have grow straight hair, a multi-billion-dollar-a-year industry in the U.S., it says. Here you have a genetic bioweapon, okay? Here you have skin lightening, a multi-billion-dollar-a-year industry in Asia, they say. Here you have cure acne by hacking bacterium. Man boobs. Here's a genetic change for men who want boobs, or the reverse. Could also be used as a potential bioweapon. So if you want to attack an enemy nation state, you can just introduce this genetic weapon, which will give all of their soldiers boobs, which would, of course, win you the war in no time. Here you have one custom sweat odor. Hack the sweat gland bacteria to produce custom aromas. Yeah, you have one here for reversing obesity. Here's one that would allow us to, it's called tetrachromacy, which would allow you to see ultraviolet light and view things in the ultraviolet spectrum. You have one for night vision, of course, making night vision better. Tapetum lucidum, a genetic modification. Improved sense of taste, super tasting. You have increased sensitivity to vibrations in hair. Heightened sense of smell, a bone conducting headphone implant. These are all things that are literally in development, guys. These are not just ideas. These are things that are actually in development. You can see how many years they've been in development over here on the left. They've been developing a lot of these things since 2012 or sooner. Okay, so there's all sorts of things that you would have just never imagined that they would be working on that they're working on. Here's an implanted Geiger counter. Increased sensitivity to heat. Directional thermometer. This is a worn one. I'll give it that. This is worn instead of an implant or a biological modification, the directional thermometer. But what is an implant on the skin is an active electromagnetic field detector. You have eye conditions that can be genetically modified. Immunity to all virus, an essential super immunity, really. What else do we have? We have all sorts of crazy ones in here. The body produces its own vitamin C through this genetic modification. Radiation caused modified cells to generate ATP. Improved bone density, extreme bone density modification. Ultrasonic fracturing causes bones to heal into even harder structures. You have the subdermal vibrator, an adult toy implant, which is called the Lovetron 9000. You have wireless subdermals for use with interchangeable sensors, okay? All sorts of bizarre changes that they're experimenting on animals for the inevitable use in humans. This is absolutely crazy stuff. What else do we have? You have a Wi-Fi detecting implant for the skin called the Signal Finder. You have a hearing aid metronome. You have an implant in the voice that changes the voice when activated and includes multiple settings. You have a robotic bowel, replaces the bowels with a machine that processes food and distributes contents. You have, here's an implant that heats or cools blood on demand. Here's one, a graft on your skin, bioelectrogenesis, electricity generation, like an eel, grow cells and graft them onto skin or tattoo stem cells. Here's a God helmet for general probing. Who knows what we've got going on with the God helmet? I mean, this type of stuff is just, this, I mean, this goes beyond a mad scientist. Let's look at some of the rest of these, see if there's any good one. Here's one. C60 life extension doubles the lifespan of rats. Detect alternating electromagnetic fields and convert it to audio, which is sent to a Bluetooth earpiece. Again, another device implanted in the ear. Here's a blood one. Use geobacter-driven microbial fuel cells would allow you to power implants. Also, you'd be able to plug yourself into a power source and convert electricity to blood sugar. Like, what are we even talking about? Check this one out. Here's a sensory device, a panoramic megavision. Use a virtual reality headset equipped with a radical set of cameras that can see 360 degrees horizontally. This is your eyes that are being changed, literally. The image is then rendered to the user as a 360 composite, which is squashed to fit the user's field of view or the headset screen. To avoid unnecessary stitching, computation, work out how to cut and stretch the component frames ahead of time, blah, blah, blah. But what the heck are we talking about here, people? There's no limits to what we're trying to do, is there? What else do we got here? Hacked gut E. coli produces essential micronutrients. Savory semen. Like, what? And then they've got this funny little note. Baby, this is a gene therapy that causes semen to sweeten like hot syrup. And does this by a gene mod to the Cowper's gland that makes your semen contain a ton more fructose. Glowing eyes of doom. Your eyes glow when you're pissed. They do this by activating the luciferase proteins on the front of the iris when cortisol levels rise. Stomach flu resistance. Look, it just keeps going on and on. Find a cure for sleep. Become a 24-hour person. This is a public sort of, when you lose a tooth, infinite teeth. When you lose a tooth, your body makes a new one to replace it. Like, look at all these. Here's one for wings. Wings. Retractable claws for climbing. Second eyelid to protect the eye from dust. Some kind of different leg? A digrigrade leg? An extra joint in the leg to allow for higher jumping, falling, and faster running. Gills, because drowning sucks. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Guys, This is a public forum of biohackers that I found accidentally by reading a letter, an email that Epstein sent, or an email chain that Epstein was a part of. This is absolutely horrifying stuff. And if this is what they're going to show us publicly, who can say for sure what they're keeping private? And if this is just like the public experiments from these biohackers in their various fields and their various experimentation chambers, like what? Who knows what is secret and going on behind closed doors? And this is this biohacker's research over here on the left. You can see that he's got all sorts of strange stuff going on. He's talking about brain reverse engineering, you know, longevity, intelligence, infrared vision through the use of pit viper snakes and boas and stuff like that. Like, it's just, there's all sorts of stuff. Studying the octopus to see what you can glean from that. Pain, robots, I mean, selective breeding, like sleep. Sleep has to evolve, this guy believes. He believes that eventually we will just not need to sleep, or we'll only need to sleep a very small amount of time. You know, it's just really, when you see this kind of stuff being discussed by actual scientists, a lot of people are going to come and comment, oh, he's just fear-mongering, of course, another guy who believes in this kind of stuff. Why do you make this stuff up? I'm not making it up. Like, everything that I showed you, everything that all the information that I read to you and discussed with you is stuff that is literally like described by scientists, talked about by scientists. I got into their own forum, which I found through a like weird little backdoor on a biohacker's X account. That's how I found all this in the first place. It's not top secret. It's public, but it's not like easy to find. And so I found it, and this is the type of stuff they're talking about. And when I'm talking about these people, I'm talking about people with like extensive resumes in bioengineering, biohacking, programming, engineering, all that kind of stuff. These are the types of people we're talking about. So if you think it's crazy, don't take it up with me, take it up with them, because it definitely seems to be crazy. And if they're already developing this stuff now, and they have been developing stuff like giving humans infrared vision since 2012, what is coming? What could possibly happen within the next few years? Is that technology fully developed yet? Do we have it? Have we successfully taken that ability by gene editing and hybridizing eyeballs and whatnot with those of pit vipers and whatnot, stuff like that? You know, like I'm just thinking out loud here. Where are we actually technologically? Because I don't think we are where they say we are. Thanks for listening, everybody. The life is in the blood.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.